Subcommittee on Healthcare Reform to order. We have two items on the agenda. One is Senate Bill 94. We do not have a quorum, but we will shortly, but we'll open a public hearing on that and then move into a work session when Senator Mona Sanderson arrives. And then we will open the hearing on Senate Bill as three as a quorum. We'll open a public hearing on Senate Bill 99. And I think what would be make the most sense is because the Dash 1 amendments have not been in play all that long, we'll have the health authority go through the bill in a summary fashion, and then we will open for public testimony. And I'm pleased to see all of you here today. I suspect we'll see more of each other. So, with that, we'll open a public hearing on Senate Bill 94, and we have three persons to testify: Sean Comer, Teresa Miller, and Laura Etherton. Whoever's first, go ahead.
Chair Morse, members of the committee, for the record, Sean Comer, Deputy Administrator, Office of Health Policy and Research in the Oregon Health Authority. Thank you for allowing us to testify today. We're here testifying in support of SB 94 on behalf of the Policy Board and the Health Authority. SB 94 provides specificity and extends the authority of DCBS granted by the 2009 legislature in House Bill 2009. SB 94 specifies the standards applied to healthcare financial administrative transactions. It extends authority for DCBS to apply to additional payers, including third-party administrators, self-insurers, managed care organizations, and clearinghouses. Administrative expenses account for a significant percentage of total healthcare spending, and there are opportunities to increase administrative efficiency across the healthcare system. Oregon could realize nearly $100 million in administrative savings each year for Oregon payers and providers. The keys to simplification are elimination, standardization, and automation of processes. In Oregon, many transactions that would be automated in other industries are still performed manually by most providers and many payers. Standardization requires each individual business to make upfront investment in changing systems and work processes. Such investments are rational only if all or nearly all providers and payers, which what they deal with, are making similar investments in the same way. Therefore, the state, we believe, has a critical role in enabling the industry to move forward together to greater simplification and automation of administrative processes. I'm also happy to report today that we've made significant progress since House Bill 2009 directed us towards this work. The Health Leadership Council has just delivered to Teresa Miller and her shop a final product as the standardization process begins. Senate Bill 94 ensures that all basic administrative transactions between healthcare providers and health payers are done in the same way through uniform standards for all payers, not just licensed insurers. Thank you for the opportunity to present to you and to answer any questions you might have.
Any questions? Yes.
Do you have a copy? Thank you, Mr. Chair. Do you have a copy of the final product with you? Did you just deliver a final product to DCBS?
Chair Moore, Senator Bates, we can get that for you. It's electronic. It's a fairly large companion guide, and I'm sure you're familiar with the companion guides that you get from payers. They're sort of varied by payer, and that's part of this process, is making one companion guide for eligibility inquiry, and that's the one that's been delivered so far.
Follow-up question?
Yes.
Do you have a prior authorization form available for us to see that's uniform for all payers?
Chair Moore, Senator Bates, no, we don't.
Follow-up question?
Yes.
Why not?
Chair Moore, Senator Bates, the first three transactions that we're working on right now were directed by you all in House Bill 2009, but the Administrative Simplification Work Group did ask for prior authorization to be on the list of the work plan to move this work forward. So it's in the queue.
Mr. Chair, as a comment, we've been working or asking for this for 10 to 15 years, and I suppose we can wait a little longer, but as I keep saying to everybody this, we're out of time and we're out of money. We need those products out there in the doctor's offices. in the nurse practitioner's offices and out there for our healthcare industry now. And so you've got the authority here, it looks like, to do it if we pass this bill, right? So one last question, Mrs. Miller, Ms. Miller, how much longer?
Mr. Chair, Senator Bates, we should be able to move through our rulemaking process quickly. I would say a couple of months unless issues come up that we hadn't anticipated, but I know the working group has been working on this for quite some time, so again, without... If there are no unanticipated issues, then we should be able to move through it pretty quickly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think most people realize we have a huge amount of paper if we have to work through it in running a medical practice or running a hospital, and the amount of paper we do is truly incredible. The accounting systems and electronic system we have to put in place are unbelievable, and the number of employees we all have for doing this are unbelievable. I spend more money in my office than most physicians do on this topic than taking care of patients.
Well,
we've got to turn this thing around. So we are really anxious. Okay.
Message received.
Okay. Thank you.
And Senator Bates needs to leave at 4:15. So if you could have that done by that time, that would be fine.
That's 4:15 a day. Thank you.
Yes, you're welcome.
Sure.
Yes. Go ahead, Laura.
Thank you for the opportunity to testify in support of Senate Bill 94. My name's Laura Etherton. Senator Morse and members of the committee. I'm Osberg's healthcare advocate, and I'm testifying in that capacity today, as well as co-chair of the work group that recommended the administrative simplification plan to implement those provisions of House Bill 2009, and also which recommended passing legislation which would accomplish exactly what Senate Bill 94 would accomplish to make sure this gets the job done. Osberg's a nonprofit, nonpartisan consumer organization, and our healthcare program works to advance rational, common sense solutions to the problem of high healthcare costs so that we can actually relieve consumers, small businesses, the economy overall from some of these high costs. It's going to take a number of different approaches, but cutting out the waste in our system and freeing up providers from having to spend tons of time with paperwork as opposed to patients is an absolutely critical piece. This is exactly the kind of costs we would love to do more cutting of. Reiterate what Sean mentioned, but basically what this bill will enable us to do is to make sure there's a level playing field that the third-party administrators and the clearinghouses are also using the same standard, the standard rules, the standard procedures for these same electronic transactions, claims, eligibility verification, payment remittance advice, and as soon as possible, hopefully by 4:15 today, prior authorization as well as some other pieces, all the other pieces that come down the pike. I want to just outline a little bit of how the work group worked. The law directed the Oregon Office of Health Policy and Research to convene a committee with consumers, with businesses, with hospitals, providers, insurance companies, a number of different folks to come up with a way to move toward a standard approach on these administrative transactions. The committee was convened by the office and included a broad number of people. It was co-chaired by myself and Dale Johnson, who is the actually recently retired HR director for Blount. And it's not a typical day when a work group gets co-chaired by Osberg and a saw chain manufacturer, but what we both have in common is we have got to see healthcare costs get reduced, and this is a common sense way to move forward. So we had a lot of fun in this committee and saw real results. Everyone on that work group, from hospitals to small clinics, from DMAP to PEB, from the insurance companies to the trust, everyone worked very hard and did tremendous work to actually come up with solutions that would be very workable. And that's where a lot of the details of the plan came in. We looked at what are the segments that are costing the most money, where we could get the most savings. And the three that we looked at that came to that top of that list were claims verification, not claims verification, eligibility verification, claims and remittance advice, understanding that they come in sort of an order. If you get the eligibility verification right, then the claims will be more right. If you get the claims right, then you get paid for the thing right. And so let's do that in a sensible order and move that forward. So exploring a number of approaches for then how to move forward with that work, the work group recommended basically not reinventing the wheel and using a Minnesota approach. They've already come up with companion guides for these processes. Use the Minnesota approach, but base it on good work already going in Oregon and good expertise in Oregon. The Health Leadership Council has convened a technical group to really vet and compare those Minnesota guides with the reality in Oregon, make sure we're making any differences, any adjustments needed. Get that to the Oregon Insurance Division that then can set rules and say, okay, these are the rules that everyone can play by, level playing field. The work group recommended that the plan go into effect in phases. The first, which is the standard guides for eligibility verification, are scheduled to be in place starting in January of 2012. And the next changes, claims and remittance advice, should be in effect by October of 2012 and July 2013, respectively. These dates for anyone who pays high health care costs seem way too far in the distance, but we are persuaded that people are working as quickly as they possibly can to get this done. On behalf of the work group and on behalf of Vosburgh, I urge you to approve this legislation. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions? Mr. Cruz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Question for either Sean or Teresa. What's going on at the federal level at this point in time?
Chair Moore, Senator Cruz, there are provisions in the Affordable Care Act that deal with these sorts of things, and this was one of the conversations that was happening at the work group level. And the work group, although there is a risk to doing it Oregon's way, felt like the risk was worth it based on what the feds have done in the past. So their track record hasn't been too good at standardizing these things. And Minnesota is considered a leader in this avenue, and they even were skeptical of whether the feds could actually do this. What we're doing here was what HIPAA was supposed to do, but didn't go far enough. So that's sort of why the work group says we should go ahead. There are two transactions that the work group says, you know, there hasn't been really a whole lot of work on these, so let's wait and see what the feds do. But for these three specifically, they said we need to go ahead because it'll be a long time before the feds get there.
First off, hanging your hat on HIPAA with what it did to the state is not a good thing to do, because which we all know. I guess my concern, and if we're doing this piecemeal, that makes some sense. I would hate to see us forge ahead with a whole system and spend all that time and all that energy and then have the rest of the nation doing something else, because then we'd have to start over. So we just need to be careful that we aren't too far out ahead of the curve. Having said that, Mr. Chair, the objective here is absolutely essential.
And, Mr. Chair, I don't have much to add other than this will obviously be a huge priority for the agency. We're coordinating very closely with the task force, and as recommendations come to us, we will be making it a priority and moving them through our process, obviously using the due process and making sure people are heard, but doing so as quickly as we can. So we look forward to that, and thank you for considering the bill.
Thank you. Any questions?
Does this give the authority to get done what we're talking about here? I mean, kidding aside, we have asked for this for 20 or 25 years. As Senator Cruz said, HIPAA made things worse, not better. I don't think it's a thing for patients, and it probably doubled our paper load.
Which is true.
Are you really going to be able to do it with this legislation? Let's give the authority and make it clear that we're going to simplify paperwork and have a system we can understand.
Mr. Chair, Senator Bates, I believe it does, and I think the importance of this bill is that it allows us to ensure that these standards are applied to entities that we don't at the Insurance Division currently regulate, for example, third-party administrators, as they mentioned. So I think it gives us the ability to address this beyond just insurers. So I think the answer is yes.
And Chair Moore, Senator Bates, I think that's correct. I think one of the things we heard from providers specifically is we have this authority, or Teresa does, from House Bill 2009. But to get all the other payers that providers deal with, this bill is necessary, and that's what we're talking about here.
One last question.
Yes.
What's been the reaction from the payers? Are they on board for these changes? Many of them have invested large amounts of capital in their particular paying system, and it may not be the same as the next one you have to deal with. We deal with 40 or 50 different insurance companies and differences within the insurance companies, all requiring different prior authorization forms, different billing forms. Some accept certain codes, some don't. It's really Byzantine. So what's been the reaction from the payers on this?
Chair Moore, Senator Bates, I won't speak for them, but I can speak to the process. The Health Leadership Council has been vetting the eligibility verification, as an example, fairly substantially for the last 6 months, and they have signed off on it. I know some of the plans you might hear from today, but they have been a part of this process, and they are the technical experts. So they have told us how it should be standardized, and we haven't been telling them.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Thank you very much. Would ask Jeffrey Baird, Deborah Bartell, and Mike Becker to come forward, please. Chair Morris, members of the committee, thank you for allowing me to testify today. My name is Jeff Baird. I'm a member of the Legislative Committee for the OMA. I'm also in my 10th year as the administrator of Broadway Medical Clinic up in Portland, Oregon. We've been located there for about 80 years. We see about 30,000 patients a day, anywhere from newborns, adolescents, teenagers, young adults, and folks facing end-of-life decisions. We care for all patients from all walks of life. Unfortunately, the increasing complexity of getting paid for the care that our patients need is becoming more and more difficult. And during my tenure at Broadway Medical Clinic, I've seen a transition from the printing and mailing of paper HCFA forms to electronic submission, and that's been a successful process. During that same period, however, the complexity of the patient's benefits has increased dramatically. It's a labor-intensive to ensure that we're paid for the care that our patients need. Over the last 10 years, our direct nursing labor costs have gone up over 66%, even though our volume of patients seen has decreased 15%. And that's just the labor cost. Nurses are spending far less time providing patient care and far more time on the telephone navigating the complex referral and prior authorization process. National studies conducted by the Medical Group Management Association have verified the increased cost of administrative complexity, and a recent study in health affairs substantiated the cost burden associated with physicians' practices having to interact with the varying rules of the many health plans that we do business with. Simplifying the administrative process will not only save costs, it will improve care by allowing our nursing staff to care for more patients. Senate Bill 94 puts into place one of the pieces needed to allow the Department of Consumer and Business Services to adopt uniform standards for healthcare financial administrative transactions based on the recommendation from the Oregon Health Authority's Administrative Simplification Work Group. We recognize this as the first step in moving towards the elimination of significant administrative waste and by standardizing current, future healthcare billing, payment, and claims reconciliation processes. HIPAA was charged by the Department of Health Services with mandating standards for electronic healthcare electronic data interchange. These standards included transactions for submission of claims, verification of eligibility, and other things. This was a good start, but little has changed for the other HIPAA-mandated electronic data transaction sets. Administrative simplification must continue for to control costs and improve care. Senate Bill 94 would mandate uniform standards for all payers, including clearinghouses and third-party administrators and self-insured plans, which would eliminate many of the hassles physician practices cite and that we experience daily with the multiple health plans. The inclusion of third-party administrators and self-insured plans is essential to the success of this effort.
because they occupy a significant portion of the market and are often the most difficult to deal with. Additionally, Senate Bill 94 would allow Oregon the opportunity to move a little bit quicker than the federal government. The possibility of standardization among payers is important to the OMA members and their administrators and practice managers, who are often the ones tasked with dealing with these issues. With a more aggressive schedule comes the potential for tougher transitions, particularly for those physicians in small practices. The OMA wants to ensure that adequate definitions are put in place to clarify administrative and financial transactions as relates to this legislation. The group tasked with recommending healthcare financial administrative transactions allow representation from a broad group of stakeholders. The DMAP as a payer, as well as Medicaid managed care organizations, will follow DCBS's rules for adoption of uniform standards. And the technical assistance is offered to physicians and other providers, allowing them to adjust to and take full advantage of administrative simplification opportunities as recommended by the work group. Adopting uniform standards for healthcare financial administrative transactions will allow providers to focus more of their resources on providing care for patients. The health authority must take on and finish these other projects to capture efficiencies and cost savings. Thank you for the opportunity to address the committee.
Thank you. Any questions?
Chair Morris, members of the committee, thank you for allowing me to testify today. My name is Deborah Bartel, and I'm the clinic administrator for Portland Diabetes and Endocrinology Center, a physician-owned medical clinic in Portland, Oregon. I'm also the legislative liaison for the Oregon Medical Group Management Association. But before I joined the clinic in 2007, I worked as an information technology consultant to medical clinics and other healthcare organizations. Before HIPAA, we sent most of our claims on a standardized form via the U.S. mail on paper. Larger clinics may have had a connection to Medicare or Blue Cross because it was financially advantageous to do so, but those two formats looked completely different from each other, and if you didn't have your own in-house IT folks that could translate that and make sure that worked on a day-to-day basis, it really wasn't cost-effective. We were pretty excited when HIPAA came on board because supposedly everyone would be using the same transaction set. The problem was we didn't realize insurance companies would be able to have their own companion guides that would add extra rules on top of the HIPAA rules. So while we considered a rendering provider the person who touched or treated the patient, some insurance companies thought that was the case. Some insurance companies meant that's the clinic's name, not necessarily the provider's name. So it would take hours and hours and days to go through these formats. If we sent all our claims to a clearinghouse, because as a smaller clinic, we deal with 1,000, 1,500 insurance companies a year, we can't have individual connections to them. Mm-hmm. So to send our claims to one place and they would split it up seemed like the best way to do it. However, we still had to make sure that if Providence wanted something a specific way, our claims got to the clearinghouse with that format, etc. So by creating our Oregon companion guide, that's going to mean that all of the insurance companies and clearinghouses doing business in Oregon will recognize the same format, the same date format, the same rendering provider definition, and it just makes things so much easier from our perspective as a physician provider, and that to me is the true meaning of administrative simplification. Thanks for allowing me to testify today.
Thank you. Any questions?
You guys understood that, right?
Sorry.
you started to see the problem?
Yes, I think so. Mike, go ahead.
Chair Morris, members of the committee, my name is Mike Becker with Providence Health and Services. Providence Health and Services is the state's largest private employer. We employ over 17,500 employees in our facilities in Oregon. We operate hospitals. We employ over 600 physicians. And we have a health plan as well. We are an integrated health system. Providence was intimately involved with the process and supports the process of the Oregon Health Leadership Council, the Oregon Health Authority, Oregon Health Policy Board work in regard to administrative simplification, and we're here today to testify in support of Senate Bill 99. The
excuse me, 99 or 94?
94, I'm sorry. I'm here later on 99, too.
Okay.
Sorry. Thank you for correcting me, Senator. We do have a letter that we submitted to the committee. I work closely with Stephanie Dreyfus and Dr. Doug Walta, who were involved in this process. And we have some suggested improvements that we think are along the lines of helping to standardize, simplify, and create greater uniformity in the process. I just mentioned a couple of these and close my comments. First off, in regard to submission of claims, we think it would be very helpful if it was a two-way street. Both providers and health plans required to use the electronic submission would certainly be an improvement. Secondly, in regard to the compliance timelines, obviously these timelines need to be workable, and to the extent that they are uniform with the federal requirements, that in itself would help simplify and create greater consistency. The third point I'd like to make is that in regard to the phrase healthcare financial administrative transactions, which appears in Section 2, Sub 1, the phrase is not defined or clarified, and we think that for rulemaking purposes, some definition around that might help. And finally, we would like to see the bill tightened up in regard to the collaboration and coordination between the insurance department, DCBS, and the Oregon Health Authority. We think that tighter collaboration and requirements of very closely working together would, again, improve the bill and lead to that standardization, simplification, and uniformity. With that, I will close and take any questions. Thank you.
Mike, do you think DCBS? Thank you, Mr. Chair. Do you think DCBS, the part of DCBS that handles health care regulations, should be part of the authority, or they should be kept separate?
Chair Morse, Senator Bates, thinking back to my days on the health plan side of things and having worked closely with DCBS over the years, though there are things that could benefit from the fact of making that function part of the health authority, I think from the broader perspective of all of the things that are on DCBS's plate, the accreditation that it has with the NAIC, and for a variety of other factors, I think breaking out the function of health insurance regulation from the department would not be in the best interests of the state or the department.
Thank you.
I agree. You've made some specific suggestions to improve the bill. We'll move some amendments, if that's what you're suggesting, to amend this bill.
Senator Morse, yes, we're willing to work with Sean Colmer. In fact, I think these comments were submitted to him within the past week. Yes.
Okay. Any other comments?
Mr. Chair, I'm a little concerned that this late date we're still looking at changing this bill. I'm glad you're here. I wish you'd been available or been asked to be part of the process 4 or 5 months ago before it came to this level. And so I'd ask DCBS and the Health Authority to make sure, certainly sit down with the payers and make sure everybody's on the same page, so to speak. I probably shouldn't use that phrase. But all together, you have the right bill at the right time, and we don't delay it even more, because every time we do this, it gets delayed, and looking at 2, 3, 4 years from now, and we still haven't got the job done. So please, if we're going to have changes to the bill, let's get them done right away.
Yes, Senator.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Okay. Can I have Sean come back up for a couple of questions, if you wouldn't mind?
Yes.
Thank you, Sean. A couple of questions, if you don't mind, Mr. Chair. One, we're including... do we have ERISA problems with this at all? I'm trying to figure out, simply because you're including them, is there any conflict in law with doing that?
Chair Moore, Senator Cruz, based on our conversations with the folks in Minnesota, there hasn't been a problem with ERISA with this.
Okay. Well, it's something to... Okay.
Something to beware.
The other question, Mr. Chair, page 1, section 2, sub 3, I mean, it says these uniform standards are adopted, but they don't apply to the Health Authority Department of Human Services. Why?
Chair Moore, Senator Cruz, I believe that's an LC issue where another state agency can't regulate another state agency. So that's why I believe it's there, but I'll make sure I get the right answer for you if that's not it.
I'd like a good answer to that because we're saying we want all you guys to do this, but we're not going to is not good. So I would think if we're going for uniformity, it would be everybody inside and outside. So if we can get an answer to that, that would be helpful.
Chair Moore, Senator Cruz, and that's absolutely the intent and what we're working towards right now within Medicaid. So maybe, we're already doing that.
Okay, maybe it's just a language issue.
Yeah.
But.
Process question, since you're up here, and I was going to ask it out in the hall, but I'm a little concerned that the big gorilla in the room sat down and said we want some changes in this bill at this point. And have you talked to ODS? Have you talked to Pacific Care? Have you talked to other major insurance? Have you talked to Regents about this bill? Have they looked at it? Do they agree to it? Or they have other issues? What was the process that we see province up here saying we'd like to look at this from the point of view of a couple of amendments?
Chair Moore, Senator Bates, we've been open about this, and we've been showing this bill as part of our participation in the Health Leadership Council Executive Committee on Admin Sim. I'd be more than happy to have additional conversations. I feel like I've had most of them already, and the Providence ones came in, as Mike said, in the last couple of days. So we'll be more than happy to work with them.
Well, Mr. It's just concerning. I mean, this should be a consensus bill being brought before us here, something of this significance, and have province come and say we have concerns about parts of it. I don't know if Regents does. I don't know if ODS and Pacific Care do. It's a little concerning. So I think we need to go back and check with everybody before you come back in. I wouldn't talk just to province. I'd check with the other major insurers and make sure they're there with you.
Chair Moore, Senator Bates, loud and clear. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Well, it was my understanding that this bill would be ready to go today, but obviously it's not. So if you would follow up with the suggested amendments with Providence and see what we might do. So are there any other comments? Thank you very much.
Thanks, sir.
We'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 94 and open a public hearing on Senate Bill 99. And presenting the bill would be Rocky King and Nora Leibowitz.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Rocky King. I'm the Interim Director of Healthcare Purchasing for the Oregon Health Authority. And with me is Nora Leibowitz, who is the Director, Development Director of the Health Insurance Exchange. We've kind of appeared before you before, so you know a little of the history of how we got here, but it's been about 4 years, as you recall, starting in 2007 with the Health Fund Board, where there was recommendations to begin framing an exchange. House Bill 2009, which many of you were members of the committees that helped develop that, that directed the health, established the health authority and directed it to come back to the legislature with a kind of the business plan of a health insurance exchange. And then the Health Policy Board established under House Bill 2009, who actually has put together a report and a series of recommendations relating to the health insurance exchange. So it's been kind of a 4 or 5 year process to get us to this point to actually have a document to begin, I think, debating in terms of what's good and what's bad and what direction we want to go. Before you, we have three pieces of information. The first is Senate Bill 99-1, and I want to remind you that Senate Bill 99 originally was done a number of months ago prior to the Health Policy Board finalizing all of their recommendations relative to the exchange. So the dash ones really reflect then those decisions that the policy board made and have recommended to the legislature since the original drafting of Senate Bill 99. We chose to do kind of a gut and stuff rather than to have 99 and a set of amendments because it would be very difficult to read. So the dash ones really are the full bill. You don't have to look at a side amendment at this point. The second thing that you have before you is a side-by-side comparison of what's required under the Affordable Act federal reform and what we've included under the state proposals. And finally is a copy of the bill that is highlighted, I believe, to reflect those requirements that are required under federal reform. So we're going to kind of go through the... And the time is running short, and we do have some people that I think have traveled a ways for some testimony. So we're going to spend today going through the bill on a section-by-section basis, giving a brief overview. Nora will do that. If you have clarity or quick questions, I think it would be good to answer them at that time. But if we wanted to get into some lengthy discussion, it might be better to wait for another period, either at the end of our presentation or at another day. I'm sure we're going to be appearing before you a number of times to talk about the content, the substance, some of the policy and technical issues of this bill. So with that as kind of an introduction, I'll turn it over to Nora and let her go through.
Great.
Before you begin, Nora, since we have, there's a lot of material, if we would just make notes of those flag those issues that come back to, I think would be appropriate. What we need to do is also be respective of the public testimony as well. There will be a lot of work on this bill in the future, section by section.
Right.
So,
thank you, Mr. Chair. We'll try to keep to a tight time frame.
Okay. Thank you.
For the record, my name is Nora Leibowitz, Development Director of the Oregon Health Insurance Exchange.
Just a quick comment. I want people to know I went through this bill carefully and asked for changes to the dash ones. It's a perfect bill. You should ask no questions.
Well, that's good enough for me.
I think we can dismiss the committee and leave now. And
okay. Well.
Seriously, I did go through it carefully. We have worked hard on to get it to something that's readable and understandable. It's something to push against. It's something for everyone to get their hands around, and I expect significant changes probably before we're done. And we welcome those changes. This is not one person's bill, and it's something we worked very hard to get to this level. The Oregon Health Authority, Dr. Goldberg, and others have worked very hard to get to this level. Now it's time for you to get your hands on it and tell us what's right, what's wrong, what we need to change. So thank you.
Mr. Chair, just for the record, I mean, the dash ones were dated 2/11. When did these hit the public domain? Was it on the 11th?
It was about that time at the most. Yeah.
Okay. And the reason for that, Mr. Chair, it is complicated, and I would submit that not everybody in the public domain has probably been able to wrap their hands around everything yet, so it will take some time.
Our goal was to get out early in session, so we have a long time to work on it.
Please proceed.
Chair, members of the committee. I just wanted to have two points of clarification. One is the paper copy of the bill that you all have has yellow highlighting, which indicates the federal requirements. We just wanted to literally highlight those for you. Although Rocky's description of the work on this in this area was pretty exhaustive, I did want to add that the Health Policy Commission that included the work of Representative Greenlick and Senator Bates also made recommendations about a health insurance exchange. So it's just additional work that's been done. So I'm going to try to go fast. Definitely respecting that there are a number of people who would like to say things about the bill. So the first two sections talk about establishing the exchange, and a lot of this is going to be familiar to you. We've talked about it last week and in other venues, that the exchange would be a public corporation that would obviously comply with all applicable laws, and that it has the public policy goals of following the triple aim, increasing quality, reliability, and affordability of care. That it would administer the exchange in the public interest and obviously be an accountable organization. We've gone through these federally required functions. They're laid out in the bill in Section 3 in order to make it clear that the exchange has the intent of doing the things that the federal law requires of exchanges. And we've talked about this in terms of information and working with health plans, et cetera. The Board of Directors is a 9-member voting board. 3 of the members are ex officio. That includes the director of the Oregon Health Authority, the director of the Department of Consumer and Business Services, and the chair or designee of the Health Policy Board, as well as 6 governor-appointed Senate-confirmed members. It includes the conflict of interest language, making sure that we both utilize the experience and knowledge of individuals who have relationships with the insurance industry and agent community and medical providers, but that this isn't a majority of the members coming from those groups, and that there is representation by exchange consumers in the membership of the board. Also that there are statutorily established consumer advisory committees for the individual and consumer and employer groups using the exchange, and then also having advisory roles for the business sector, for insurers, agents, providers. Section 9 lays out the role for the executive director, including that this position is appointed by the board and runs the exchange under the supervision of the board. Also noting that the Oregon Health Authority has a role during the transition, particularly right now when the exchange as an organization doesn't exist. The OHA is what is applying for and accepting the grants from the federal government and helping to establish the exchange until the exchange is an existing organization. In sections 12 and 13 that cover the operations of the exchange, we wanted to lay out what are the things that the federal bill tells us that we need to do, and a few additional state provisions. We've talked in the past about the federal requirements in terms of certifying health plans and providing a streamlined, seamless application enrollment process for Medicaid and commercial participants. On the state side, we've put in that state can enter into contracts with carriers and others. Obviously, that's going to be necessary to run the exchange, as well as accepting grants to establish the exchange and having a phase-in of employer groups in 2016. Section 14 lays out that we're going to follow relevant laws. And the federal law establishes that the exchanges are going to adopt a number of rules relating to the information that the exchanges need to collect and sort of how they use that information. That's related to the keeping information confidential as well, making sure that information that's collected remains confidential and where it is shared with other state agencies or the federal government for the operation of the programs, that it needs to be, it needs that confidentiality and security of information needs to be maintained. In the sections 18 through 23, there's the provision that the exchange can establish a fee or administrative charge in order to pay operating expenses, that the exchange is exempt from certain provisions of state law related to personnel, printing expenditures, et cetera. And that's sort of where the organization goes to becomes a public corporation rather than a state agency. That's sort of the distinction. And the idea of those is related to making a nimble organization that kind of do contracting quickly, et cetera. And then the exchange can do employee and contractor criminal records checks. There are a number of accountability provisions, including an annual audit by the Secretary of State that information going to the governor, the legislature, as well as relevant state agencies and the federal government. Additionally, the exchange will report on its activities, both its financial and its operational activities. And then finally, Section 30 declares an emergency. The act affects takes effect on the passage of the law. So that's sort of the bare bones of what's in the bill.
So, Mr. Chair, would you like us to go through the other documents, or would you like to entertain questions at this time?
Any questions?
Well, Mr. Chair, I know my preference. I mean, that was certainly an overview, but it doesn't tell me anything of what the guts say. So, we're going to need more detail for each section.
Yes, we will come to that. The question is, do we pause, take public testimony, or do we work the bill? Because if we work the bill, there will be no public testimony.
Mr. Chair, I just a couple clarifying questions, not into detail, because you've outlined, you've highlighted what the federal components are. And, you know, for example, in Section 12, where it actually has dates, I'm wondering if that's really in the federal components, and then you make reference to the federal guidelines and policies. It'd be nice to know if the guidelines and policies you're referencing actually exist and what they are. I mean, yeah. You know, that's specifically on page 12 at the bottom of it, where, you know, as I understand it, there's a whole lot of the federal act that has yet to be defined and rules yet to be. But if you're making reference in the bill to policies and guidelines, I'm assuming they must exist, and it'd be nice to know what they are.
Yes, Chair Morris, Senator Cruz, I think you're right. You're absolutely right in saying that there are places where the federal regulations haven't been set yet. For example, the essential health benefits that, you know, we're referencing that we have to follow that as a basis, but that won't be the finalizing of the federal regs in that area won't be done until the end of this year, probably. But that's what the federal government's working on now. So,
okay.
So we're saying we have to have that minimum standard, but there's more to do.
I guess, Mr. Chair, I'm just asking if they've developed anything, and it's part of your reference, it would be nice to know what is on the books at this point in time.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Mr. Chair, Senator Cruz, and use page 12 as a great example. That could have been four slides in itself, just going through those details, and we'd be happy to take a section at a time at some point and go through that, because I think it does lay out, and we have laid out what some of the federal requirements are, and we could also then highlight what's more to come, and there is a lot more to come. Although, you know, I want to caution that we're trying to make this Oregon's exchange. I know there's going to be federal requirements, but to the degree that we can develop the flexibility and working with the, you know, CMS and HHS, we're going to attempt to do that, because we want this to look like Oregon's exchange and not just an exchange that's copied from somebody else.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, and I appreciate that, Rocky, and I agree, but the feds can also put up stone walls
that
you can't
correct.
Climb over. So,
thank you, Mr. Chair. Real quick, since we're on Section 12, because this is something that's a big hang-up for me. When you get to line 26 through 30, and then you flip over to page 12, and you have 1 through 5, but this is the part where it's essentially saying, hey, if you don't participate in the exchange, you don't get a tax credit to force businesses into the exchange, which hurts private insurance companies that are providing health insurance as well. So for the rest of the committee here, some of us have heard it, some of us haven't. Could you go into some detail on that?
Sure. And the federal law does specify that starting in 2014, so there are tax credits available for small businesses now, and obviously there are no exchanges, but in 2014, to continue to get another 2 years of tax credit, that small businesses that would be eligible need to go into the exchange to get that tax credit, and that is a federal requirement. So, it's important to note that tax credit is a two-year tax credit, and it could get renewed, but if it's not renewed, then it's our feeling that it can't be just the tax credit that makes employer groups want to participate. That it has to be the exchange has to be providing value to small businesses for other reasons. And
recognizing that it's a concern that it may feel you're concerned that there's some coercive force. But our feeling is that we want to encourage small businesses to use the exchange because it's going to provide value for them above and beyond a tax credit.
Okay. What I would suggest we do is rather than jumping into all of the detail of the bill, let's take the public testimony, and we have obviously some more time that we're going to have to spend in that detail, but let's listen to the issues, and presumably those persons that are testifying have some knowledge of the bill and can be speaking to issues specific to the bill that we can listen to. And just as a point of clarification, who from the OHA will be the point person for us to work with in crafting amendments and guiding this? Is it you, Rocky?
Yeah.
Okay.
Chair Morris, it'd probably be the best at this stage to come through me.
Okay, good.
And I'll work with committee staff on how to set up that best communication.
Right, that's right. So we need to have a good, thoughtful process because I suspect there will be a number of issues here. Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
We'll be back. Bring up Lisa Leftenmeyer, Doug Zibel, and Sherry Weber. And I apologize if I have mispronounced the name.
Almost got it right. It's Doug Zibel.
Okay.
Yeah.
I've been called worse, Mr. Chairman, sir.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman and committee members, I want to thank you for the opportunity to testify today on Senate Bill 99 and the current amendment that's been put forth on February 11th. I'm a little nervous today. It's my first time testifying in front of a Senate committee. So, my name is Lisa Lettenmeyer. I am an owner, the owner of HealthSource Northwest, an insurance agency in Tigard, Oregon. I'm actually here today representing NAFA, Oregon. NAFA is the National Association of Insurance and Financial Advisors, and I am currently the Vice President of the Oregon Chapter. I have received a copy of the amendment and took the time yesterday to go through each page and made comments and highlights and have discussed it with other NAFA members. The thing I'm going to discuss today is the concerns that the insurance producers feel as I go through the bill and the rest of us on the lack of language, on the role that the insurance producer will play, and quite honestly, the duplication of processing that seems to be occurring in the bill that we already are doing for you, as far as assisting clients in understanding insurance options, enrolling them in insurance plans, and continuing to be there as a customer service guide. There's also references in the current amendment with regards to background checks for employees that work within the exchange. We do that now. We, as insurance representatives, have to go through a training session and licensing process. We continue to be trained and educated on a regular basis as we renew our licenses. We go through a background check initially, and we're held to a high standard, and we carry errors in emissions insurance. So my comments today are on the role of the agent. I am concerned, and so are my colleagues, that there are comments that have been made with regards to insurance producers and that are not advantageous for us. We've been told or heard that even some of our representatives here in Salem have made comments that they don't like insurance agents. We question that. We're concerned by that. I'm not going to stand here or sit here today and say that the industry is perfect. In any industry, you're going to have a minority of people that aren't doing their best. But I assure you, the majority of the insurance producers that are out there, licensed in Oregon, are doing this because we believe in it. We believe in helping our clients, and we continue to be there as a customer service support to help that client through. When an insurance producer sits down with a client, we actually have two bosses. Our first boss is that client. It is our job to educate the client and advise them on the different insurance options that they have, guide them through the process of selecting the right product for them that's going to fit their needs, for their family,
continue through that process for the application and assist them going forward on an ongoing basis as a customer service support. That could be for claims questions, access to networks and doctors, and, of course, on an annual basis, at minimum, to discuss product changes and price increases. Our second boss is the insurance carrier. We are the agent of the carrier. It is our job and duty to represent that carrier fairly and accurately, to make sure that the client does understand the products that they're purchasing. In addition, as we take that application for the client, it is also our duty to make sure that we fairly and accurately represent the risk of that client back to the carrier. At any point in the process, either of those bosses can fire us. Our clients can choose to go with a different agent, or they can go back to the carrier. Our carriers can choose to cancel our appointments. The reason we are paid a commission is not only to assist the client up front, but to continue to be there, which we are. My lobbyist, Roger Beyer, emailed to you yesterday, so hopefully you have a copy of it, a position paper that NAFA and the IIABO presented to the Oregon Health Authority in June when I testified at that committee hearing. In that letter, there's a two-page position from NAFA and IIABO with regards to our role as insurance producers, but more importantly, we backed that letter up that day with 15 client testimonials from my client base. Now, I don't want to say that this is about Lisa today. I am one person of thousands of insurance producers. And those 15 letters is just one small sampling, not only of my client base, but of all the clients in Oregon that are currently and have been serviced by insurance producers. And the comments that you will read in those testimonial letters are comments that you would hear throughout the state. I also chose to bring two of my clients with me today. Doug Zebell, I have worked with him and his family for over 4 years. I have helped him numerous times with different insurance products as his family situation has changed. Sherry Weber is a small business owner, and I work with her on her small group plan. At this point, I'm going to turn it over to my clients.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee. This is the first time I've ever testified before a Senate subcommittee, too. So, and it's nice to see my Gresham Senator Anderson, is on the committee. About 4 years ago, I used to work for AgriPac, who used to be a large vegetable manufacturer here in the Valley. And they went under, and I lost my job. And I started my own consulting firm.
Excuse me.
Yes, sir.
Your name.
Oh, I'm sorry. Doug Zebell. Pardon me. I started my own consulting firm and found out that my wife had carcinogen cancer. My daughter had some major issues with concussions, so through Lisa's help, we were able to find two different policies, insurance policies for them, and then my own. When I was at AgriPac and left them, my insurance premium through COBRA, gentlemen and ladies, was over $2,000 a month. Lisa was able to help me find credible insurance where my insurance premium was only about $600 a month. HealthSource, and not just Lisa said, this is not just about her. And as she elegantly said, we can fire her if we can find different insurance. But she has gone to bat for us to help find insurance so that we stay in coverage so we don't, the pre-existing condition doesn't come into play as long as you've got credible insurance going forward. Because my wife's cancer, we've had to deal with Medicare, Medicaid. Folks, dealing with the medical bureaucracy of Medicare, trying to get things approved, trying to get things done, they don't really care. You're just a number. You're just a voice on the telephone. To have an agent like Lisa and others, thousands of others throughout the state that will actually do research for you to make sure that you stay in coverage means more than any dollar amount that I can possibly say to you. Yes, we are in need in health reform. There's no doubt about it. And this is more of a rhetorical question. If what happens in D.C. and in the states of Virginia and Florida happen, that making Obamacare unconstitutional, maybe some of these discussions is a moot point. Yes, we need to make change. People need to be covered. But to eliminate the agents who are doing the background checks, doing the work, I just don't think a government agency or a government administrator is going to show the caring attitude for we, the consumers. So, thank you.
Hi, good afternoon, committee. I am Sherry Weber. It's my first time testifying in front of a committee, so we are a trio of three, I don't know what here. But
neophytes.
Neophytes.
Well, you're going like pros, like you've been here. Mm-hmm. You're doing excellent.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Again, my name is Sherry Weber. I do own a small business. I am from Oregon City, so a special shout-out to my representative, Mr. Bill Kettimer, over there.
Thank you.
Nice Thanks for being here. Appreciate it. I am also a licensed life and health insurance agent, and my business is brokerage of product for individual disability and long-term care. When I incorporated my business and went into business with my husband, he and I were the only employees and needed to get some health insurance because I came from a W-2 environment where I lost my group benefits. We chose to go to a health insurance specialist to buy our insurance because there were some issues and challenges with us that we needed to address, and we had some special advice, and I didn't feel prepared to give myself that advice, even though I was licensed to do so. I chose not to. My husband ended up resigning from his employment, and I hired another employee and again needed to go back and find some choices and different things, working off of a budget and trying to do the best job I could to ensure my family and my employee with, you know, the funds that I had, and was very pleased that I was able to do so, give up some things, make some stretches, but still have enough to have good coverage for us, again, with the advice of Lisa, and again, echoing my friend here, Lisa is not the only one that does this. There are thousands of people in Oregon that do, and being a broker, I know a lot of them and a lot of very good quality people in this state that provide these services to their clients. So I just wanted to, I did read the amendments through, and I want to really encourage the committee to keep in the front of their minds that this should be Oregon's plan. It should contain choices and diversity for the small business owners that need it. Everybody needs something different, and I'm afraid by reading some of these remarks, and I know this isn't set in stone as yet, but I am afraid that the future possibility of assessments upon the insurers and asking them to pay things, even though they're not in the exchange, will condense the market and drive out some choices and perhaps leave us with cookie-cutter plans, and that would be very, very bad for us. As consumers to have little choice. So I want to advise caution. Please keep the insurance agents involved and take advantage of the already built workforce. And thank you so very much for your attention.
Very good. Yes, Lisa?
Mr. Chairman and committee members, just kind of recapping our testimony here today. The insurance producers are already here. We're in every single community in this state. We believe in what we do, and we have become friends with our clients. If you're going to make this exchange a success, we really believe that you're going to need our help. Our concerns today is that we're not seeing language in this current bill or amendment that really speak to the role of the insurance professional. Thank you again for your time.
Okay, thank you. Any questions or comments? Okay. By the way, you do better than the lobbyists.
They did remarkably, didn't they?
Yes.
Especially first-timers, my guess.
Okay, we've got Kevin Corcoran, Todd Yorkie. Is it York or Yorkie?
Mm-hmm. York.
York. And let's also bring up Steve Doty.
Chamber.
Okay.
Do you want to go first or second, third?
I can go first.
Sure.
Chair Morris and members of the committee, my name is Steve Doty. I am an insurance agent. I own an agency in Portland, Oregon. Been in the business for over 30 years. I'm here today speaking on behalf of the Oregon Association of Health Underwriters. We are an organization that represents insurance agents like myself throughout the state who specialize in the sale and service of individuals health and group health insurance. I just want to make a couple of points with regard to the bill that we have some concerns about. In Section D of the bill, it talks about the standardized health plan benefit options. Well, I think it's be helpful for standardization for to make it easier for people to compare as they purchase their plans. One of the concerns we have is that this provision might ultimately result in fewer choices for individuals. Right now, individuals and employers have a wide variety of plan options available to them and quite a number of carriers that they can choose from, and they use these benefit options to help manage their costs. Limiting those choices would remove a valuable tool that the individuals and employers use to manage those costs. For example, would the standardized plans include an option for an HSA, a health savings account, or an HRA, a health reimbursement arrangement? We hope that they would, because employers use those tools. We also hope that the legislature will make sure that in this bill that there will in fact be a dual market. There will be an exchange market and a market outside of the exchange. It's not clear in the bill whether that, at least it wasn't clear to me, whether that will happen. Forcing everyone to purchase coverage through an unproven entity like an exchange could be a huge mistake if the exchange proves not to be as successful as we'd like. So we hope that we give the employers and individuals a choice. If the exchange has some value, it'll prove itself in the marketplace, and people will migrate there naturally without being forced there. Section 12 of the bill talks about the role of agents, and you've already heard some of that, so I'll try not to be redundant, but I'll make a couple of comments about the role of agents. We do a lot more than just sell product. We are the de facto HR department for many small employers. And as a result, we have to be experts not only the carriers and their contracts and their PPO networks, but also on state and federal law. We need to be experts on state continuation rights, COBRA, portability, and we also assist in resolving claim issues and billing issues, and we need to be up to date on ERISA, HIPAA, and family leave laws, just to mention a few. And as has already been mentioned, agents are located already in every city and state throughout every city and town throughout the state, and we can be a valuable resource in the exchange being successful. Section 3 and Section 12 of the bill refer to something called navigators. It's not clear exactly who these navigators are or what their role will be, but they sound to me that to be an awful lot like agents. That's what we already do. It seems like navigators are reinventing the wheel. We already have navigators, and they're called agents. Health insurance is a very complicated product, and individuals and small employers consistently use independent agents to help them navigate a multitude of federal and state laws and understand the different products. Agents are required to be licensed and are regulated by the state of Oregon. In order to maintain their license, agents are required to receive a minimum number of hours of continuing education and are required among those requirements are education on law and ethics. And agents are also required by the carriers who appoint them to maintain a minimum amount of errors and omission insurance. The state currently regulates all types of health insurance agents and life insurance and property casualty. We also regulate real estate agents and stockbrokers. And in this day and age of consumer protection, do we really want to expose consumers to inexperienced, unlicensed, uninsured navigators? If the state wants to entrust the important responsibility of assisting individuals and employers to a navigator, the state should require that they be licensed, regulated, and required to obtain ongoing continuing education and maintain a minimum amount of errors and omission insurance. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair?
Yes. Yes. Well, I didn't realize that was your
service trying.
Hi, Sam.
Thank you. I'd like to understand a little about the role of brokers. How are brokers paid?
Chair Morrison, Representative Greenlake, brokers are paid by a commission. It varies by carrier. Some carriers pay a percentage of the premium. Some carriers will pay a fixed dollar amount per member per month. And that's been the latest trend, and more carriers are going that direction, so that there's a fixed fee as opposed to an ongoing increasing commission based on a percentage as the premium goes up, which, quite frankly, I think is the fairer way to do it.
But what's the, I mean, that's a, may I?
Yes, follow up a bit?
That's a commission or a fee on each month's premium on an ongoing basis?
Chair Morris, Representative Rooney, correct. Yes, it is.
And what's the sort of range of those commissions?
Chair Morris, Representative Greenlick, they range from about 3 to 5% on average. I looked at the annual report that the DCBS produces every year on health insurance, and if you look at that, you'll see the line items in those in their administrative expenses of commissions and how much is paid. And if you total the top seven carriers who write almost 95% of the business in the state of Oregon, if you take the percentage of commission, the premium as a the commission as a percentage of premium, it averages 2.2%.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any other questions?
No, that was my question.
Yeah, okay, good. Go ahead. Okay. So whoever's next.
Chairman Morse and members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to speak to you today. My name is Kevin Corcoran, and I represent, I'm a member of both the health underwriters and NAFA, and I'm here to also represent my clients who are in, our agency serves the metro area, Marion County, Hood River County, Wasco County, and Umatilla Counties. So we have a pretty wide footprint. What I wanted to comment on today were a couple things in the bill with regard to the employee language and whether or not the intent of the bill is to include agents as employees under the exchange. So we would have concern that currently it's omitted, so we'd probably just ask for some clarification in that regard. The second comment that I wanted to make is about some comments that were made by Joel Ario, the past insurance Oregon Insurance Commissioner, and the current HHS National Exchange Committee this week regarding the role of agents within the exchange. He said, as I quote, "The intent of the navigators is not to replace agents, but to reach out to hard-to-reach populations not currently served by agents." He also said that states will have to figure out the role of brokers in the individual market and state exchanges, but brokers are almost sure to have a presence in the exchange programs set up to serve small businesses. And then his final comment was that there is widespread agreement that if it's going to work, that meaning the exchange is going to work, the agents have to be part of the process. So I would echo the comments that Steve and Lisa made before in this regard. Third, I want to comment about FEOP and the Office of Private Health Partnerships that are really great examples of an existing state entity that assists the consumer in qualifying people for a subsidy and then refers them on to an agent in the community to assist them in their coverage options. So the Oregon Health Partnership Group has been embraced by the agent community, and we believe it's a very viable consumer advocacy and partnership example. OPHP also has a agent referral list, and to Lisa's former point, we can be fired from that list or discontinued from that list at any time. So I would submit to you that if an agent were not living up to their commitment, they would be removed from the opportunity to transact business in the state. And finally, health insurance agents live in the communities that we serve and that our clients live in. We employ Oregonians with good-paying jobs. Our job is to mitigate the risk for our clients. Health insurance is just one component of that job. It's becoming an increasing point, but it's not the only point. So we do serve as HR helper and compliance arm of their firm. So it's a valuable component of their overall risk mitigation. Since we are not captive agents working for one company, we are able to do what is best for our client every time. Not some of the time, every time. With that, I thank you for your time and my ability to speak to you today.
Okay. Thank you. Go ahead.
Senator Morris, members of the committee, my name is Todd York. I'm an insurance broker here in Salem. I also own a small agency that serves mid-Willamette Valley, well, from Eugene, have some groups up in Washington even. I also work in the individual market and Medicare market. I'm here not only to represent myself, but I'm also have a dual membership with the Oregon Association of Health Underwriters and NAFA. The language in the bill, which has already been laid out, and I quote, says that they want to facilitate community-based assistance, and that's a federal requirement for the exchanges, and also establish a streamlined and seamless application and enrollment process. Based on my experience, agents are the most efficient, best equipped, and cost-effective way of providing that. And we're already in place. Since most of my colleagues have been very articulate about what our role is, I thought I might add a couple numbers that haven't been offered yet. There are over 13,000 licensed health agents in Oregon in place, community-based people, with relationships with people that are out there in the health insurance world right now. We are obligated legally and ethically to act in the best interest of our clients. And we are required by the carriers and common sense to carry errors and omissions insurance. The issue of using licensed insurance agents within and outside the exchange seems to be required by the bill itself, and we're hoping to be part of the process as we have been in the past. Just there have been a number of references to the kind of education that's required to become a licensed agent. Frankly, it's been so long ago that since I was licensed, I had to call the division myself. But in order to be licensed, you need to have 20 hours of pre-licensed training. Reference was made that we have to be fingerprinted and background checks done before we can even sit and pass the test. Once we're licensed, we're required to have 24 hours of continuing education the first 2 years that we're in the business, and 24 hours every 2 years after that. And I'd say most of the people that you've seen in front of you today, I can speak personally, I usually have twice, three times that amount of continuing education. And in the interest of time, and since my predecessors have been so eloquent, I think I'll end my comments with that and would entertain any questions.
Okay. Thank you. Any questions? Comments? Okay, thank you very much. Okay, Jim Hauser, Aaliyah Christofferson, and Michael Taylor, and Michael and Cheryl. You want to come up together? We'll wait. We'll wait for you. Let's just go ahead with this panel, please.
My name is Aaliyah Christofferson, and Senator Morris and committee members, I appreciate you allowing me some time to speak today. I'm not in the insurance industry. I'm not in the healthcare industry. I'm the owner of a telecommunications business in Central Oregon. I started the business in 1991 and moved it to Oregon in 1998. I have, during this period, in the last few years, served on the Finance Committee for the Health Fund Board, the Exchange Work Group. I'm one of the three authors of the minority opinion for the Exchange Work Group, the Technical Committee, and presently on the Consumer Advisory Committee. I have covered my employees' health insurance since the day that I started. Thank you. At that time, I had one employee on Kaiser in California. When I moved my business to Oregon, the first thing I was told was, did I know I had just moved my business to an uninsurable location? But my point today is not the 600% increase that I've had in my health insurance cost for my employees since starting my business, because everyone talks about the cost. I hope the exchange helps with the cost, but even if it doesn't, I think it's very important to the small businesses of Oregon. My employees range from a single 21-year-old man to a 60-year-old woman to a 30-year-old mother of four with a chronically unemployed husband and a 28-year-old seriously diabetic father. No one plan can provide the kind of choice that a varied group like that has. Yet, because we are in Central Oregon, where there is very little choice, and because we're a small group, we have no choice but to offer one plan, one premium, one type of coverage across all of our employees. I did an interview with a local newspaper last week, and she found it humorous, even though it's absolutely true, that what my employees and I do every December is we vote on how the plan is going to work. How many people want vision care? Raise your hand. $750 deductible? $1,000 deductible? We need to start over because one employee takes a medication that's not covered under the plan that we all just voted on. Another major issue is the age factor. I would love to say that I am immune from age prejudice in hiring. However, if you're looking at a 50-plus possibility for an employee and realize that by hiring that employee, you're going to skyrocket the health insurance costs of your 21-year-old employee, it's very difficult to ignore. I know, because I hired a 60-year-old employee this year, and the first thing we did was the company took on some extra cost for the younger employees because it's not their fault that I decided to hire a 60-year employee. I have to compete with large businesses for the best employees, and it's very difficult to compete when you have these kind of problems with the kind of health insurance that you provide. I'm looking forward to the day that I can log on to a website. I, as the employer, can choose what level of coverage I'm going to offer, and then all of my employees can log on and sign up for the health plan that works for them, including the mother of four children who at $15 an hour cannot afford the $1,200 a month family plan that we have with our health insurance, and so has a mixture of healthy kids and OHP to have her be able to log into one place and manage all of that at the same time is something I'm very much looking forward to. Patrick O'Keefe, who is our agent and also someone who's been active in many of the same committees, brought up something I hadn't thought of in the discussion of whether or not there should be a requirement for using the exchange versus it being voluntary. His statement was, why force people? Why not build such a quality exchange that people are flocking to it because it has its own advantages? I would challenge agents to be in exactly the same place. Why force me to use an agent? Why can't I do my own research? And if I don't want to do my own research, I have a perfectly good agent to do that. They should be held to the same standard that the exchange is, where people buy from the entity they buy from because of the quality and relationships that they have. This is the reason that I have spent countless hours of my own time commuted back and forth across the mountains on snowy days like today was. The reason why on many of these committees I hung in there because I was frequently about the only voice that was not in the medical profession, not in the insurance industry, and not from this side of the mountains. I believe in the exchange model, and I would really like to see it in place as soon as possible. Are there any questions?
Well, thank you for traveling across the summer.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Chair Morris, members of the senators of the committee, my name is Jim Hauser, and I am co-owner of Hawthorne Auto Clinic in Portland, Oregon, and also co-chair of the Main Street Alliance of Oregon. The Main Street Alliance, formerly the Oregon Small Business Council, is a statewide coalition of small business owners that provides small businesses a voice in the pressing public policy issues both in Oregon and nationally. Our advocacy promotes vibrant business, healthy communities, fosters leadership development, and among socially responsible business leaders. When my wife, Liz Daly, and I formed Hawthorne Auto Clinic 28 years ago, we were committed to offering the people that worked with us a good benefits package, including comprehensive health care. Health care is a major issue for small businesses like ours, especially in the auto repair industry. We're a highly skilled group. We offer good benefits to keep good people and to protect our training investment. We're also an aging profession, which makes health care critically important to us. There are 49 million Americans without health insurance. 60% of those work for small businesses. In 2008, 637,000 Oregonians were without health coverage. Millions of small businesses together power the American economy. During the economic crisis, like our current Great Recession, the businesses operate close to the margin or don't survive. But innovative entrepreneurship put them in the lead of any economic recovery. For small businesses, health care has been a major headache. The health care costs for small businesses have gone up 128% since 2000. Workers' percentage of the increase has gone up 18% more than with large firms. Administrative costs among small businesses are 2.5 times what they are for premium administration than what they are for larger businesses. Less than half of the small firms can afford health care benefits. Health care costs for our nine full-time employees and their families have doubled over the last 8 years to exceed 20% of payroll, almost $100,000 a year for just nine full-time employees. And today, employers are reducing or eliminating health care benefits. A shrinking part of the population has any health insurance at all. So our proposal is to allow for the exchange to add businesses as they are able. This year, the Affordable Care Act gives Oregon a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to extend health care coverage to all of those and to begin to lower health care costs to everyone in the state. That program is the Oregon Health Insurance Exchange. The exchange, in our opinion, should be an active purchaser. That's what large employers do. They negotiate for better rates. The exchange should be allowed to add businesses of any size up to 100 employees as it is able. As the proposal is written, it would be up to 50 employees in 2014 and 50 to 100 in 2016. I can understand that it would need to be phased in, but I would suggest that increasing the number beyond 50 be as possible and by 2016, not to begin January 1st, 2016. The conflict of interest rules concern us greatly. I don't see any reason why members of the that health providers, insurance agents, and pharmaceutical companies or any group like that should be on the board of the Health Exchange. I'm sure that their interests will be adequately represented at every meeting that's ever presented, but I find that a conflict of interest to have that group as voting members on the board, and I believe that it should only be members of that it should not be members of that community. And finally, the exchange will be better able to control costs of health care and yet provide quality customer service if individuals and small businesses, if all health insurance is sold through the exchange, what's known as the single or sole market. If insurance is sold outside the exchange, the buying power will be fragmented. When I went to a meeting of the Oregon Health Policy Board, a consultant, Bill Kramer, made a presentation that demonstrated that in a dual market scenario, there will likely be on the order of 327,000 members join the exchange by 2014. In a sole market scenario, there would be 989,000 Oregonians who would be within the exchange. Considerable difference. So if the sole market is not adopted, then our belief is that products, services, and prices should be the same inside and outside the exchange, that that PEB, the Public Employee Benefit Plan, should be offered in rural areas where there are currently one or two, at most two plans offered, that a strong community rating system, both inside and outside the exchange, primarily prevent adverse selection. We don't want to see the exchange become a glorified high-risk pool, and that brokers' fees be the same inside and outside to prevent steering. Thank you very much for the time, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Okay, well, thank you, Jim.
Thank you.
Comments?
Just real quick. Yes. Jim, how many employees in your business?
Chair Morris, Senator Anderson, we have 13 employees, 9 full-time. We have two student interns from Mount Hood Community College. We have a helper who comes to us through a rehabilitation program, and we have a part-time person who comes in and does filing and scanning.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We will call Michael and Cheryl Taylor and Laura Atherton.
Senator Morrison and senators, my name is Michael Taylor, and this is my wife, Cheryl. Thank you for letting us testify on the important issue. We support a health insurance exchange in Oregon. We have owned and operated Taylor's Portable Welding at 16130 Southeast Oatfield Road in Milwaukee, Oregon, since 1997. In the past, I have employed as many as 4 people. Currently, I am the only employee, and my wife helps out when needed. I'm a welder and small businessman. My average work day is 12-14 hours long. In the past, I've worked for as many as 42 hours straight in order to get a job out on time. I'm not afraid of hard work. Needless to say, this leaves me very little time for shopping for health insurance. When I've looked over different health insurance policies, I feel like I'm overwhelmed. They're very large, complicated to go through. I'm not a doctor or a lawyer. I'm a welder. And if I'm going to put food on the table, I need to spend my time generating and completing work. Even during better economic times, I was unable to grow my business because I could not afford to offer the same benefits as larger companies did. Subsequently, when the work was there, the business was ready to grow. I could not find and retain the quality employees that I needed. It was kind of a no-win situation because I constantly was going behind my workers fixing mistakes. Good employees want good benefits, and employers need to be able to afford them. And I'll give you my wife here. Yes.
Chair Morrison and senators. As Michael's wife, I have tried to help in shopping for health insurance, but I'm little help. In 1996, I graduated from Concordia University with my teaching degree and became a substitute teacher looking for full-time work. Substitutes have no health insurance or disability benefits in the 8 districts I worked in. Unfortunately, I was rear-ended on the evening of April 27, 2001, after my first good interview in a long time. The head injuries from this accident not only required jaw and inner ear surgery, but cost me my career and have left me with pain, dizziness, short-term memory, and cognitive deficits, making me of little use in trying to help navigate the complexities of health insurance. Currently, we have private individual health insurance policies. In the last 10 years, Michael's health insurance with Kaiser has gone from $129 a month in 2000 to $490 a month in 2010. That's a 378% increase. My coverage has gone from $169 a month in 2000 to $361 a month in 2010. That's a 213% increase. It is harder to measure what has happened with my insurance coverage because my coverage has degraded considerably in the last 10 years. I cannot change companies because of pre-existing conditions from the car accident. I also now pay a $1,000 deductible, which precludes my being able to go to the doctor except in an extreme emergency because it is just too expensive. This past year, I've had pericarditis twice. I continue to have an irregular and racing heartbeat, but can't afford to go in. This month, we paid our health insurance, but we have had to ask my mother to make our house payment. In just 10 years, we've gone from paying $3,578 a year in 2000 to $10,212 a year in 2010. Our income has only $2,000 higher in 2010. In 2000, 9% of our income went to health insurance. In 2010, 24.5% of our income went to health insurance. That does not include prescriptions, copays, vision, dental, deductibles, or any other out-of-pocket or over-the-counter expenses. We want an exchange that makes dealing with health insurance a better experience for small businesses like ours. This exchange should include the ability to negotiate to lower costs and have better coverage, outline and compare the different policies, making them easier to understand, make this information easily accessible with help if needed, enable us to offer the kind of health care choices that big businesses can offer and is run by someone who will look out for our best interests, not be run by insurance companies. An exchange like this could make us more competitive by providing benefits like the large companies have and place our business in a position to grow again. A health insurance exchange would be good for small businesses, good for the economy, good for Oregon, most importantly, good for people.
Okay, thank you very much.
Question.
Sure.
Thank you.
We've got several people who have to testify. So.
Great. Thank you, Senator Chair Morse and members of the committee. You've heard from me plenty today. There's a lot of people who have come from a distance to speak to you today. So I submitted written testimony plotting the direction of this bill, urging the committee to make some improvements to make it even better for small businesses and consumers, and I'll testify when there's more time in the future. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. And thank you very much for coming. Appreciate your testimony. We have Tom Holt and Mike Becker.
Chair Morse, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Tom Holt, Director of Legislative and Regulatory Affairs for Regents Blue Cross Blue Shield of Oregon. I'm here today on behalf of our more than 750,000 members who purchase insurance through us. I want to just underline initially that we support directionally where this bill is going in establishing an exchange. We have a great opportunity before us, thanks to the work that began a few sessions ago with the help of Representative Greenlick and the late Ben Westland and others, and has now progressed to this point. But we need to do an exchange and do it the Oregon way and do it as well as we can, or we may get the feds telling us how they think we ought to do an exchange, and I think we're way ahead of the rest of the country and would prefer that we stay on our course and not necessarily have something imposed upon us. What I'd like to do, rather than weed into the details of the bill, is to just tee up a few issues that we think would be ones to have further discussion and work on to improve the bill and get it to a point where we can have something that be very successful and financially sustainable in the long term. Seems a real central policy issue for the legislature is balancing this issue of how much flexibility do you give to a public corporation, which is probably a good way to go, versus having some more direction than what's currently in the draft of what that public corporation does and to what extent it looks a little bit more like an agency in terms of open processes and what direction it looks more like the way a company would typically operate. There's some good lessons for us to apply from both the SAFE experience and from OHSU, which are both successful institutions in the state. A few just kind of general issues. One that we think is really important, we're going into a world of guaranteed issue, and we now have a lot of legal doubt as a result of the court cases still at the district level, but almost assuredly going to go to the Supreme Court, as well as political doubt because of the changed national environment about whether the individual mandate will still be there by the time we get this thing up and running. And so we would recommend that the committee spend some time considering what plan B we might have to encourage the maximum number of people to be into the exchange pool so that we are maintaining that critical leg of the stool that the health fund board identified of having maximum enrollment in the pool and not lose that as a result of what might happen that's really out of all of our control. In terms of governance, we like the fact that there are different interests and institutions represented on the proposed board. We would recommend strengthening the sort of health industry representation on the board from a May to maybe a little more directive there. In particular, we would suggest putting in a certified actuary in the mix so you have someone who's really required by their certification to be objective about the finances of how it operates. And then in terms of how the various size of groups get brought into the exchange, we would concur with the idea that is, I think, laid out to some degree in the bill already of staging the enrollment by groups. We have some unhappy experience in Oregon of when we merged small groups from the 2 to 25s all the way up to 50s, and there was almost an immediate impact on premium and costs for those groups. And that's something we need to proceed with very carefully, and also along with that, take a look at what needs to be in the bill versus what the exchange can do in terms of establishing some risk adjustment mechanisms amongst the groups that the exchange will serve so that it can be financially sustainable and not leave the state holding the bag for some losses. And then there are a few issues that I would say are really boil down to the interplay between the new exchange and its functions and what are currently DCBS functions and probably need to remain DCBS functions. Some of the language around how we qualify carriers and maintaining competition inside and outside the exchange. How the exchange facilitates a market inside itself and also still allows for plenty of innovation outside the exchange. Something that we tend to forget a little bit when we talk about health insurance purely is that many employers are looking at a range of benefits, and that's really where the agent folks that you heard from earlier really come into play very significantly in helping employers bundle together something that makes sense between health insurance, workers' comp, wellness programs that are not necessarily in the insurance market purely, but integrate very importantly with their health insurance coverage and things of that nature. And then some issues around, you know, how the premiums are regulated in and out of the exchange. And last, I would suggest that the legislature give very careful consideration with the public corporation as to the budget accountability. It's as a public corporation, it's going to have P&L accountability or surplus versus loss accountability, but also looking at, you know, what fees are really going to be required to run the exchange and how those would work and who they come from. With that, I would just simply offer that we want to be part of the solution. And if there are, you know, we'll look forward to bringing you more detail as we continue in these hearings. But if there are work groups that are put together on this, we're very happy to put our oars in the water and be part of coming up with a solution that's very good for Oregon and good for people who are seeking insurance in Oregon. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Chair Morris, members of the committee, my name is Mike Becker with Providence Health and Services. I've submitted to the committee a letter written by Providence Health Plans, and I would like to highlight a few of the issues in that letter. First off, Providence supports and embraces the concept of healthcare reform, and we are very committed to the triple aim objectives of improving affordability, improving quality outcomes, and patient satisfaction. We see the exchange as an important tool in improving access, options for coverage, ease of purchase for the consumer, and affordability. And in that regard, we see that purchasing and selecting carriers to participate in the exchange can become a method to drive delivery system change. And we think innovation in care delivery, integration of services, and innovation in new reimbursement models can become an important part of how carriers are selected and participate in these standards for participation and in carrier rating for the exchange. A couple of comments related to the bill that we think would improve SB 99 in regard to the dual market. We think that the exchange should be designed to augment rather than replace Oregon's existing competitive insurance market. Secondly, in regard to the benefits offered within the exchange, we think the bill could be improved if affordability of the benefits offered through the exchange were called out specifically as an affirmative statement in the bill, that be a consideration in designing those benefits and offering the benefits through the exchange. Next, in regard to the qualifications of the insurers participating, as I noted, a competitive environment is important to maintain in this state, and we think clear objective standards for insurer participation would improve this bill and at the same time allow flexibility enough to preserve that robust market that Oregon has for health insurance. And as I mentioned previously, those standards could also be creatively used to drive delivery system innovation, models of new care delivery, integration, and reimbursement. Regarding the timeline for bringing the exchange online, as Mr. Holt noted, I think it's important to keep in mind the rate compression and how that bringing the market segments into the exchange and small employers in particular up to groups of 100, how that will impact rates. So that is an important consideration as we go about looking at that timeline for the market segments that will come into the exchange. We think it would, be helpful in the bill to clarify the role of the navigator. That is not clearly called out and defined in the bill, and some clarification along those lines would help. Regarding the OMIP phase out, it would be beneficial not to immediately phase out OMIP because of the potential for destabilization of the marketplace by an immediate phase out upon the time that the exchange goes live. Next, in regard to sustainability of the exchange, we think it important that the exchange be accountable for keeping its costs low. And in that regard, that should be called out directly in the bill, making this the exchange self-sufficient and focused on affordability of the products in the exchange is a key component. And then finally, in regard to the advisory and technical committees, which are discretionary under the bill, we think it would benefit if the exchange actually were required to have a technical committee around insurance and with producers, consumers, carriers, focused on those technical components of the exchange. And with that, I will close and take any questions. Thank you.
Yes.
Mr. Chair, I'm not quite sure what you mean by technical. Give an example.
Chair Morris, Senator Mona Sanderson, I think a good example would be along the lines of what Mr. Holt referred to, the actuarial components, some of those more technical components of insurance.
Thank you.
Yes. Thank you, sir. You, I think it was Tom, it might have been you, Michael, mentioned you want to keep alive a lively market outside of the exchange in order to allow innovation. Can you give me some examples of the innovation over the last 10 years that's come out of the insurance market that we want to encourage? And, I mean, like higher and higher deductibles, is that kind of innovation? More and more coinsurance? Those are the kind of innovations you're talking about?
Well, Chair Morse, Representative Greenlick, a number of things. One, there have been development over the last decade or so, variations on the health savings account model. That's one model that actually a lot of our employees like very much. It's one of the options that they have, and many of them select it. But also things like development of what we would call virtual networks that bring the value of integrated systems to places where they don't necessarily have the ability to exist in brick-and-mortar form, and things of that nature. I'd be happy to give you some more background information on that at a future hearing.
Senator Morse, Representative Greenlick, on behalf of Providence Health and Services, I think there are examples that exist within the insurance industry and the integrated health delivery industry. If you look at some of the innovative care models that Providence Health Plan is using with in collaboration with Intel and
it's not health insurance, though, right?
Senator Morse, Representative Greenlick, I believe it is through our health plan those care models are being integrated and rolled out into the marketplace. We are moving in that direction, yes.
Mr. Chair, can I follow just briefly? But our hope is that those will be things that will be encouraged and designed inside the exchange. I mean, we would hope that innovation can take place inside the exchange as well as outside. And certainly delivery models would be an important thing I think everybody's hoping for.
Senator Morse, Representative Greenlick, I agree with you, and that's my comment in regard to the selection process, the rating or grading process in regard to health plans. Those tools can be used to drive that delivery system change and reimbursement change.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. This might be more for you, Michael, more Tom. Do you know what you pay in RVU to a doctor when they perform services?
Senator Morse, Representative Wiedner.
Wagner.
I'm sorry. Representative Wagner. It does vary by specialty.
Just average $60?
Yeah, I think that is in the ballpark.
Do you know what the state pays when you see a Medicaid patient or an Oregon Health Plan patient?
Senator Morse, Representative Wagner, I do not.
I believe it's around $28. May I follow up with one more? Do you find that you have to subsidize the health plan patients or state patients because of the lower rate, or the doctors have to bill more, or find they bill you more because they're not receiving enough off of the payments from the Oregon Health Plan or Medicaid?
Senator Morse, Representative Widener, you are referring to the cost shift from government programs, Medicare, Medicaid. Yes, that is a correct statement. There is subsidization that gets ultimately passed on to the healthcare consumer through higher reimbursement rates on the commercial side that find their way into the insurance premiums.
If I may follow up with one more, and this may be you, Tom. How's the Massachusetts Health Exchange worked out and the things that have happened with that?
Chair Morse, Representative Widener, I'm not an expert on Massachusetts. There have been some issues there that I've heard about the ability of the state to ensure that they maximize their pool, where they had rules of who needed to be in the pool and people chose not to be in, and when push came to shove, there wasn't the will to get those people into the pool. And in fairness, they were one of the early states in doing an exchange, and I think they probably learned some lessons from that or in the process of making corrections to it. But that gets right to the issue that the Health Fund Board identified of really needing, you know, various different legs of the stool, where if you're going to have guaranteed issue that everyone gets immediate insurance without qualification, then you must have mechanisms to bring people into that pool. Nationally, the Congress chose a mandate, but there are other ways to do that as well, and we'd suggest that we look at those just in case.
Thank you. Thank you. Anything else? Okay, we have the last remaining, Betsy Earls and Jan Meekin. Did Jan have to leave?
She just had to leave just now.
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. But 90%
of the people are
okay.
So I'll be by myself. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Betsy Earls, representing Associated Oregon Industries. Associated Oregon Industries and its members see a great deal of promise in the establishment of a health insurance exchange in Oregon. We're looking forward to working with the committee and other stakeholders in putting it together. We're very supportive of Senate Bill 99 generally, and we feel that there are a few sections that need additional work before the bill is absolutely perfect. And I'll just point out a couple of those.
It's got a long way to go before it's absolutely.
I'm sure it will all come together. one of the things that we're concerned about is starting on page 5, the Board of Directors appointment membership. If you look over to the bottom of page 6, the bill provides for at least 2 members who shall be consumer members. And one of those consumers is enumerated to be an individual consumer purchaser, and another consumer member is to be a small business employer. And I don't think it's only a matter of semantics to point out that a small business employer as a purchaser is qualitatively different from an individual health insurance purchaser, and is also quite different from a consumer that uses the health insurance that's provided by that employer purchaser. We don't think that it's appropriate to include a small business employer purchaser of a group health plan within the same category as consumers. By the same token, we think perhaps both categories could use a little bit more representation on that board. If you look over to Section 7 also, the Consumer Advisory Committee, this is clearly a committee that will be necessary as the exchange continues to come together. However, it does not include any mandate to include any business purchasers on that committee. I realize that Section 8 allows the board to establish other advisory committees. However, that's certainly not the same thing as imposing a requirement for an advisory committee, so we would appreciate equal being on equal footing with the Consumer Advisory Committee as healthcare purchasers. I think the last major point I want to make tonight, and we can kind of leave some of the details out in the weeds for another day, is that we're concerned that the bill allows the exchange to limit the number of health plans that would participate in it. It's our position, as you've heard from several other people, that the health insurance exchange can be an absolutely vital part of the health insurance landscape here in Oregon. We would like people and employers to gravitate to it by choice, and if you limit the choice of plans within the health insurance exchange, that will make it less attractive to businesses and consumers. Limiting choice, I think, limits competition, and if we're limiting competition, we're not doing much to reduce cost increases of health insurance and health care. So I can leave some of the details for another day. But
okay, well, thank you. Any comments or questions?
Thank you.
Okay. Obviously, there will be a lot of suggested amendments, and we need a well, don't look so surprised, Rocky.
You're one, Senator.
I would ask that they be funneled through Brian, our administrator, so that we can rationally put them together in one place and process them.
Mr. Chair, I must have made an error then, because I've already been requested, someone has already requested an amendment to this bill, and I gave a mother's note.
Well, that's quite all right.
All right.
You're the chair of the main committee, Madam Chair. But it, for future amendments, if that could be the process, I think it would be a place where we can bring them all together and understand how the bill might be marked up as we go forward. And then we'll have the opportunity to engage health authority. Make this thing work.
I'm excited. I think the testimony, everyone's testimony, was extremely important, at least it was to me. I think we have a ways to go a little bit. I do want a plans that there is choice. I think that the navigator and the agents insurers, I don't think we're getting rid of an industry, but I think that you will have a role, but I'm not quite sure how it's going to look yet. And so hopefully it's going to... It will be good for Oregon. I truly believe that.
There are several things we don't know.
That's right.
Mr. Chair, there's more we don't know than we do.
It's generally the case.
Somehow it seems true every day for me.
Okay.
We're getting
anything else for the good of the order? If not, we'll close the public hearing and convene next week.